So that's Acts chapter 15 from verse 36. After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord, and see how they are." Now Barnabas wanted to take with them John, called Mark. But Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia, and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him, and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, and strengthening the churches. Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and the elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they increased in numbers daily. Just that far.
Yes, welcome back to Acts. We've had a brief but deliberate interruption in our journey through Acts to pause for a couple of weeks, the last couple of weeks, to dig down into some important theological principles that help explain what's going on in the letter, in particular that letter, if you remember in chapter 15, that the council in Jerusalem had written to the new northern churches, where there were Jews and all heaps of Gentiles in those churches coming together with each other in fellowship. And that letter itself was quite an interruption to our journey through Acts. We were tracking along with the ministry movements of God's apostles, and suddenly everything stopped for a chapter as that council met. In verse 36, as we start this morning's passage, we rejoin that narrative of God's mission to the world in terms of those ministry movements of his apostles. Paul wants to go back to the cities where they had travelled together a year or so earlier, before that council. In Acts 13 and 14, Paul wants to go back to those cities before that council was needed. He says in verse 36, after some days, he says to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers and sisters in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are." Every city, Paul? You want to go to every city? Even the city where, let's say, you were stoned to death, Paul? Why would he want to go back where they've been? To visit the brothers and sisters, he says, to see how they are. Paul has a pastoral heart for the people who heard their preaching and believed on their last mission. And despite the hostility to the gospel in those areas, perhaps even because of this hostility in those areas, he wants to go back and see how the believers are faring. And there's no doubt in my mind that Barnabas was equally keen. The problem came when they considered who they might take with them as they went and did that. In verse 37, Barnabas wanted to take with them John, called Mark. But Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Paul and Barnabas, that is. Paul and Barnabas go their separate ways over this disagreement in our passage. And we'd love to understand this in more depth, and we'd love to get to the bottom of who is right and who is wrong in this matter. That's our human instinct in these things, isn't it? We want to know who's right and who's wrong. But what does the scripture there actually tell us? Well, the scripture doesn't really tell us anything. We've got nothing more than this note here that Mark had withdrawn from them during their first mission trip when they went to Pamphylia. And the actual passage for that incident back in chapter 13, just to jog your memory, it didn't tell us much either. This is it in chapter 13. This is the incident we're talking about. Paul and his companions set sail from Paphos, that was in Cyprus, the island, and they came to Perga in Pamphylia on the mainland. And John left them and returned to Jerusalem, full stop. That's got even less detail than the passage we're trying to look at today. Our narrator in Acts here, Luke, is not really giving much away, is he? All we really have is that because Mark withdrew halfway through that first mission trip, Paul doesn't think it's best to take him to those cities on his second mission trip. And just so that we're clear, it's not that Paul is never going to have anything to do with John Mark ever again. On the contrary, in fact, later on, Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 4, and he says to Timothy, Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful to me for ministry. So it's not that he doesn't want anything to do with Mark again, and nor will it be the case that Paul's never going to have anything to do with Barnabas again after this disagreement, it seems, because well, we read that passage in 1 Corinthians earlier, and he's still talking about Barnabas. It's simply that for some reason, Paul considers it best not to take Mark on this trip. And there's various reasons why that might have been. Perhaps it's out of principle. Well, Mark had walked away from the last mission, so why take him on this mission? Maybe it's that kind of thing. Maybe it's out of pastoral concern for Mark. Hey, you know, this is going to be every bit as dangerous as it was last time, Barnabas. Mark may not be ready for this. Perhaps he thinks it's just going to be plain unhelpful, just a distraction for the believers in those areas when they get there and see how they're faring. Maybe it won't be that encouraging if they take along a worker who didn't come last time. Maybe it's just going to raise unhelpful questions. Maybe it's just going to chew up valuable ministry time trying to explain to those people in those areas the past history of this mission team, the personal history of this mission team. We really can't know. We really can't know because the scripture doesn't tell us what's going on underneath this. And as to that second question that instinctively pops up into our heads, who was right in this disagreement? Was Paul right or was Barnabas right? What should they have done about John Mark? What should they have done? Should they take him with or leave him at home? Again, we just can't know who was right or wrong. If we don't know what's going on underneath, then we can't know who's right and wrong. And the scripture doesn't clarify it for us. If indeed either one of them was right or wrong, other than being disagreeable, of course, we just always want to think that there's a wrong and a right in every disagreement, don't we? But maybe there wasn't. Anyway, we can't answer those kind of questions about this dispute, but we should notice that the outcome of this dispute is actually quite positive. Suddenly there are two mission teams now where there used to just be one mission team. Verse 39, and there arose a sharp disagreement. We don't like reading that kind of stuff. So they separated from each other. This sounds terrible. But Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Two mission teams. And then Paul went on to Derbe and Lystra. Chapter 16 and verse 1 tells us there in the next section. And then on to Phrygia and Galatia next week in 16 verse 6. Spoiler alert if you just want to glance down one more line. And thereby the cities that Barnabas and Paul visited on that first trip will be visited again, albeit by two different mission teams instead of one. There are a few different things that we can notice about this new dual mission, if we can call it that, this new dual mission with Barnabas and Mark going one way and Paul and Silas going the other way. First of all, for such a sharp disagreement in verse 39, for all the sharp disagreement over this, there also seems to be a high degree of cooperation between these two new mission teams. If their idea was to go back around the churches from their last mission trip, then we ought to notice how neatly they divide that job up. They divide this mission field up between the teams. Barnabas and Mark will head to Cyprus, which requires a boat trip, by the way, and visit churches there in Salamis and Paphos, we presume, and so on. And Paul and Silas will head the overland way, by road. They'll go to churches on the mainland in Derbe and Lystra and Iconium and so on. There's no doubling up. There's no competition between these two teams. It's actually a nice complementarity between what they're doing. And second of all, there seems to be an awful lot of logic to that decision. There's logic to that decision. Barnabas, as it happens, was a native of Cyprus, we learnt back in chapter 4. He's a native from Cyprus. He's got family and friends. He's got support, a home base. He's got the home ground advantage there to do this job really well. It's a logical thing for Barnabas to head the team that goes to Cyprus. And Paul, of course, was a native of Cilicia. He's from Tarsus in Cilicia. And he has spent a lot of time in Syria and Cilicia. We read that in Acts chapter 9. And he reminds us in Galatians 1 that he's already done mission work in Syria and Cilicia. So it makes sense for Paul to head the team that actually goes inland through Syria and Cilicia on their way to those cities from the first mission. These are logical directions for the two teams to go. And third, we should notice that, of course, both of these teams have authorized, approved representatives, delegates, envoys from the Jerusalem Council that interrupted all this in chapter 15. There is order to this decision because both of the mission teams have got an approved envoy or a right teacher, a truthful teacher designated by the Jerusalem Council on that team. Barnabas was designated by the council to accompany this letter that they're taking around the churches. And Paul and Silas were both designated to accompany this letter specifically. And so there is order to this decision. Both teams are led by people designated by the Jerusalem Council. Given all that cooperation, that logic and that order, we might contemplate that both teams were sent off with the blessings of the church in Antioch. Luke mentions that specifically for Paul and Silas's team in verse 40. They've been commended by the brothers. But that's probably because Luke is specifically following Paul's gospel work in the rest of this book of Acts. That's what Luke's following. Spoiler alert if you haven't read Acts. That's where Luke's focusing. After all, that's the team here that Luke is going to travel with. Sorry, spoiler alert again. That's next week's passage. Luke is going to travel with this team of Paul and Silas. So his focus in writing now is on Paul's movements. So when it says there in verse 40 that Paul and Silas departed having been commended by the brothers, I don't read that as if he's trying to imply that Barnabas' team, on the other hand, weren't commended by the brothers in Antioch. In fact, if that was the case, I'd imagine Luke would have written something to that effect here. No, the motives of both Paul and Barnabas, we would think, were the same. They want to proclaim the word of the Lord. They want to visit those churches and see how the brothers and sisters there are faring. They just disagreed on how best to go about that on this occasion. And without them having any biblical instruction as to something so specific as to whether Mark should go along with them, either option might have been valid. Either option might have been valid. If the Bible is silent at that level of detail, then isn't there freedom in how they choose to go about this? Morally, ethically, biblically speaking, are they not free to either take Mark along with them or not? But within the bounds of that freedom, the two men were of different opinion. In any case, in the final wash-up, as I say, although it might not have come about by the kind of circumstances we would like to be reading about, the outcome of this sharp disagreement between Barnabas and Paul has a serious upside to the glory of God. One missionary team has become two missionary teams. Barnabas, the son of encouragement, as he was called, took Mark and hit the high seas. And Paul, meanwhile, hits the highway, taking Silas and so too taking Luke, as we'll see next week. And along the way, he recruits Timothy in our next section. Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple was there, a disciple named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman, who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. Does it strike anyone else here as odd, to say the least, that Paul, of all people, Paul, would have someone circumcised? Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him. I mean, is this the same Paul who later on wrote in 1 Corinthians 7, just before where we were reading earlier, was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. Is this the same guy we're talking about? Is Paul acting out of character here in Acts 16 by having Timothy circumcised? And not just that. It's not just that. Paul does this while in the process of delivering the letter from the Jerusalem Council that specifically says they don't have to be circumcised to be saved. Look at the very next verse in our passage, verse 4. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. They're carrying the letter that says, you don't need to do this. And he does this. Paul, of all people. They're on a mission to strengthen the churches, deliver that Jerusalem letter about not needing to be circumcised, and Paul takes Timothy and has him circumcised. What's going on here? What is going on here? Well, underneath all the confusion in this, and let's be honest, a seeming contradiction to our eyes in our culture, it's very contradictory, it seems, but this is actually another situation governed by freedom. There's freedom here again in this part of our passage. The decision to circumcise Timothy is not being enforced upon Timothy by the insistence of others, as was the situation in Acts 15, verse 1, that prompted that whole Jewish council, Jerusalem council. In that situation, the Jewish believers had been wanting to impose their cultural customs on Gentile believers. They were insisting that they must do this. This case of Timothy is different. Timothy's part Jewish, and I think we can safely assume that he's in agreement with Paul on this, you know, particularly because they're carrying a letter declaring that nobody needs to do this.